Hello and welcome to You Irons, the West Ham podcast from the good people at The Athletic. I'm Sam Delaney. I'm joined, as always, by The Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashane Thomas. Hello, Rashane.
How's it going, Sam?
Yeah, I'm good. Good episode of the podcast this week. You and I caught up with a man who is very much a legend in my younger years at West Ham, as a West Ham fan, as Ian Bishop. What are your memories of Bish? Are you a bit too young for that?
Yeah, really young for the days when Ian Bishop was at West Ham. I think I'm right in saying when he left, I would have been about 6 or 5.
Jesus.
So the only thing I remember is the long hair and a strong Scouse accent.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, a lot of, he was a big character, and the hair and the accent were part and parcel of that. But I tell you what, Rashane, I don't know how much you've seen of him on YouTube, but he was a hell of a player, and he was like the heartbeat of our midfield for almost a decade. I used to love him. I was delighted he agreed to come and chat to us on the show. What did you make of the chat?
I thought the chat was really good. I mean, as I reflect on like the guests we've been able to get on the podcast, probably my favourite one so far, just in terms of how honest Bish was about his playing career, in terms of like how it was at West Ham. I feel like you'd agree as well.
Well, he was very passionate about West Ham, and you can always tell whether that's genuine or not. And, you know, he's a player you really think he loves the Hammers. But he was very interested about a couple of things. I thought the stuff he said about, you know, his dealings with the England setup was fascinating, quite revelatory, really. And also the stuff he said about when Frank Lampard Jr. first broke into the team, because, of course, it was really Frank Jr. who took Bish's place in the side. And he had quite a lot to say about that, didn't he?
Yeah, and when I was looking into his stats during his like last couple of years at West Ham, in the last season in particular, he only played 4 matches. Matches in the last 97-98 season, obviously. By that time, Frank Lampard Jr. was like a 13 regular. So, yeah, I mean, listeners will read it in the article, but yeah, it's a shame the way things ended. But nice to hear Bish be open and honest about, you know, his time at West Ham with us.
That's right. So anyway, we caught up with Bish on the phone from his home in Florida, America, which is where he now lives. This was a couple of days ago. We had a smashing chat. And as I say, a couple of revelatory little nuggets in there, which Rashane has written up into an article you can read on The Athletic. And by the way, you can sign up to The Athletic right now to read Rashane's article, Ian Bishop, and loads more. A bunch of great stuff on there at the moment. I recently read a fantastic piece looking back on Capello's time in charge of the England squad. So get yourself on there. You can try it out for free for 30 days right now if you go to athletic.com/West Ham Pod. That will also mean you can enjoy our great football writing just as the football season resumes in less than 2 weeks. Anyway, here's our interview with Ian Bishop. Hope you enjoy it. Ian Bishop, West Ham legend, welcome to You Irons. How are you doing?
I'm all good, mate. And you?
I'm very well indeed. Bish, you've been out in the States for quite a few years now. How have you been enjoying it, and what's your involvement in football out there these days?
Well, I'm sort of a freelance coaching right now. A friend of mine has a club up in Palm Beach that he likes me to come up and just take sessions. I don't really get involved in teams as such. You know, I had 10, 11 years of doing that. I felt like I gave the kids the best possible learning that I could. You know, in fact, one of the best compliments I ever had wasn't about football. One of the mums had come to me and said, "You've made my son a better person." And that's what it was all about. It wasn't just about the football. So, you know, and I'm living in sunny Florida. What more can you ask for?
Bish, how often, when we are back to reality, how often do you manage to get over and see West Ham these days?
Well, I'd like to get over maybe 2 or 3 times. And I had a great trip lined up before we had this virus come on. I was at the Bournemouth Palace on a Saturday. Then I was coming up to London for West Ham Wolves on a Sunday. Then I was going to Goodison for Everton Liverpool on the Monday. And then I was at the Etihad for City Real Madrid on the Tuesday. So that was the trip I had planned. Wow. And it all got cancelled. I did manage to fly in and catch the Arsenal-West Ham the week before. So I got there Saturday morning, threw my bags in the hotel, and went straight to the Emirates to watch the game. And I stood at the West Ham end with the fans, and it was brilliant, apart from the result, that is.
Fantastic. Well, you know, obviously everyone knows you're a Scouser, although I was thinking before the show, it's a long tradition of West Ham Scousers, isn't there? What, yourself, Alvin, Wardy, these days Aaron Cresswell as well. There seems to be a connection because all of those names, yourself and you know, Wardy and Alvin, it's not just that you played for West Ham. You've got a real strong bond with us, the fans, haven't you? What do you think that is? Do you think there's something in that, a connection between Liverpudlians and East Londoners?
Certainly. You know, for me, it was home from home.
Mm.
That's what it was. I mean, to settle in. Obviously, Wardy went the other way, so. But I'd knew Wardy from my time at Everton.
Yeah.
He was a semi-professional at the time, and I was an apprentice. So I knew him that way, but we sort of missed each other with the going across in the same deal. When I did get there, Alvin sort of took me under his wing, you know, and I'd seen, not just with Alvin, but for me, the West Ham people, it was no different to the Scousers, mate, no different to the Liverpool people. Same values, you know, same principles of life. And I settled in fairly easy. And if I was hanging around with Frankie Mack, he'd want to go to West End. Yeah. And with the other lads, I'd like to go out in the East End. It was home from home.
I look back on those days. It was looking out, 89 through to 98 you were there. So you just shy of that 10 years. But you played in a lot of different teams. You played under three managers. There was a party, a reputation for us being, you know, a squad of party boys, let's say. Do you think that, you know, now on reflection, we had some great teams and you were at the heart of all of them. Do you think that might have cost us that little 1% that might have pushed us on perhaps to a cup final or to a European spot?
No, I think that them sort of things bring you together.
Right.
You know, it's you talk about, you know, making friends. And a lot of players did come and go in my time there, but the friends you make, don't forget, we have to go out on that field and go to war for each other, you know. And the fact was is that we love being together away from the football also, and that's a big factor. That's something you probably don't get today. And I, you know, you can look at the West Ham team of today. They don't have that spirit. It isn't there, what we had in it, especially in the early to mid 90s, you know. They don't have anything that comes close. And what we did, I mean, the story with me and Big Ludek, you know, I hadn't been there long and I was still staying at the Swallow Hotel in Waltham Abbey. And Big Ludek turns up, goalie from Czechoslovakia, or near Moscow, as the song says.
Yeah, which is geographically completely incorrect, but, you know, it's a nice song.
But the only thing that rhymes.
Yeah.
So, Big Ludek comes in the hotel, and I think straight away, what do? You go and sit them down, have something to eat, and then the bar there was quality. So, I figured, look, you know, I'll show them what it's all about. And we went and sat at the bar, and we had a few drinks, and we ended up, although we couldn't speak a word of English, I ended up teaching them how to play spoof.
Right.
You know, with the coins. You guess right, how many coins you've got in your hand, and the loser drinks the drink. And he ended up. He ended up about 4 a.m. throwing his guts up before his first day's training. So that was sort of the introduction. And honestly, when new players came, the first thing you wanted to do with them was let them feel part of your groups, you know? You know, it's still daunting to go into a dressing room that you know is already bonded. So the first thing for me was to get people involved with the group itself. And I thought that was massive for us. It was only mid to later on in the 90s that things started to change. You know, Harry started bringing the foreigners in and expected us to live our life like they did. And it wasn't going to happen.
Bish, I think I'm right in saying, before you joined West Ham, Paul Ince had just moved to Man United. So, I mean, looking back now, were you at all nervous or a bit daunted by the expectations?
No, not at all, no. Because, to be honest with you, I mean, I became friends with Ince through a couple of the other lads, you know. I know another one that wasn't popular for what he did at the club, but look, I just trounced him for Man City, hadn't we? We just beat Man United 5-1 and Ince played. And, you know, there was no intimidation factor. You know, there was some big fish in that Man United team at the time, and I didn't even look at it as filling his boots, to be honest. I'm not the same player as Ince. You know, I can't relate myself to what he does in the game. You know, he's a different type of midfield player. So I didn't think the comparison was going to be there. I just felt I wanted to come to West Ham and show the fans there. Because look, part of the attraction for me was the club itself and the reputation of the football that the club played. And I had no doubts when I was coming, even though it took me 4 years to get back to the top flight and such a short time staying there with Man City. I had no doubts about stepping down again to a club like West Ham. None at all.
That team that, I mean, really, it stretched through a lot of your time at the club. But when you look, when you talk about that gang mentality, when we had yourself and Ludo and Julian and Martin Allen in midfield with you, that was a like a crazy game, wasn't it? I mean, talented players, all of you, but there was a lot of fight and spirit. I mean, I can remember games like, I can remember stood on the North Bank watching you play Wimbledon in the Cup that night. I think you were playing in that game. And there was a lot of Barneys and madness going on. You weren't, you know, West Ham traditionally had this reputation for being a classy sort of outfit with a bit of a soft underbelly, but that was a tough side, wasn't it?
Well, we could handle ourselves, you know. I think that the mistake people made and the mistake the bigger teams made playing against Wimbledon was they went out to show them. They went out to say, look, we're going to out-battle you. And that's one thing doing that when you forget about what you're really good at, you know, because that's why I think they beat teams. They lulled them into just going into a battle. We could have a battle, but when we beat them with football. We let them know. I mean, my big thing was, I know Vinnie Jones is supposedly one of the toughest footballers there were. But I know when we played against him, he emptied the midfield role and went and sat back in amongst his two centre-backs because we would be passing rings around him. We wouldn't let him close enough to kick us. You know, it wasn't... And then if it did change and we didn't have possession, we could all, you know... I mean, look, Dixie was an inspiration in that sense, wasn't he? And all it took was one of us to fly in and go and hit somebody. And, you know, I didn't have that big reputation for doing that. I could leave my foot in, you know, but because you're known as a passer or a playmaker, people really don't expect it of you. My thing was, let the kickers come and kick me, and I'll show you, because I'll still get up. I remember with David Batty, Blackburn, he caught me round the thigh and ended up somersaulting over him. And I jumped up quick to take a quick free kick, and the ref wouldn't let me because he wanted to book him. And I said, don't book him. It's fine. It was just a little bit late. And knowing he was coming for me, but letting him know that it doesn't matter. You know, you can do it all you want. And I didn't want him. I didn't want him booked. I didn't want him sent off. I wanted him still on there so I could get my own back.
He also played alongside Kevin Keane, and he's currently coach for West Ham's under 18, and he's doing a great job. I mean, what was he like as a teammate?
Quiet. Unassuming, but when you think his best mate was Martin Allen, you've got to think there was something else in there, you know.
That is a strange combination. I didn't know.
Very. I mean, we never understood it, but it seemed to work. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, look, Kev wasn't one for coming out with the boys. He didn't do the things we did with the drinking and the socialising and all that. But he was still one of the boys in the dressing room, and you had to respect his football. You know. Energetic, gave you everything, left nothing out there. You know what I mean? It was you could trust them.
It was underrated, actually. I've been watching so much old West Ham stuff online during this lockdown period. People have been posting so many old games, and Kevin Keane. I mean, yeah, there were stars, and I would count you among them in that team of that era. You know, yourself, Stuart Slater, Julian Dix were the sort of stars. Kevin Keane was underrated in terms of his skill and technique, wasn't he?
Yeah, not better players though. You know, you've got to trust your teammates. And believe me, if you wasn't doing it, we would let you know. That was the thing about the dressing room. The early 90s and through them 90s for me, we created a bond. And I think that group of people stabilised the club again. And I don't think that group get enough credit for that. I mean, I know fans talk about the type of football we played and... You know, if you think when I came there, I think we missed promotion, then we got promotion, then we relegated, then we got promotion. It takes a lot of character to come back like we did and then stabilise the club into the Premier League, which is where they bear fruit today, you know. It would be nice to be known for that fact only, not just for the good football that we played, you know, or how much we loved the club itself, which I think you sense that anyway.
It's interesting your perspective on that. I think as time passes, those of us who were there in that era think even more fondly of it, because it is that combination of, it was a rare combination of skill and fight. West Ham, you know, there have been times under Allardyce, for instance, where we were considered only a very practical team. And then for years under John Lyle, everyone thought we were a soft touch but beautiful to watch at home. And I think people now look back and think, well, there aren't many sides that had had as much steel and skill at the same time. I mean, I think it must have been your second season when we did go up. Yourself and Stuart Slater in particular were on fire that season. And I remember, didn't you both get a call up to the England Bees at that stage as well?
Yeah, we did.
I mean, and that for a team in the second tier, for players playing the second tier, that was a big deal. I mean, I know that, you know, all of us in the stands thought that you should have had an England cap at some point. How close do you think you got?
I think that was it. I think that was me after that one game. All them ridiculous gay rumours didn't help me. And look, for whatever people think, whether people think I was or wasn't good enough, I wasn't going to displace Gaz around then, you know.
Mm.
But other players did get caps that I felt like jumped ahead of me in the queue, really, you know. Why after one game, when we'd won the game, I'd played maybe 75 minutes or whatever it was, I'd hit the crossbar with a chip, I'd had a tip round the post, which I wasn't really known for getting forward. And I felt I did good enough to get another chance. I'm not saying I did good enough to step up to the full squad after that one game, but I should have been involved again.
It's astonishing, isn't it, in this day and age, to think that those rumours about someone's sexuality be relevant to whether or not you were selected in the England squad. But you're saying that's what you think did it.
Well, I didn't get a full cap. It's because there were some brilliant midfield players, to be honest with you.
Bish, you were better than Neil Webb, right? That's all I'm saying. You're better than Neil Webb. He was your position. You're twice the player he was. I know you're not going to say it. I'll say it.
Well, look, that's opinions, isn't it? That's people's opinions. So the manager at the time, if his opinion was the other way around, then that's unfortunate for me. It's just the type of player that the manager may have wanted. You know, and I have to accept that also, which I do, because, look, Howard Kendall sold me twice and City fans sent him death threats. He told me that himself. But I have to respect him as a manager and the job he had to do. You know, and if he didn't do it, I wouldn't have had me 9 brilliant years at West Ham. So I can't hate him for that. I understand, even with Harry, like, at the end. I hated him at the end, and I loved the man, you know, for what he did for me in my career. But I hated the fact that he was the one stopping me going out into that field and doing what I love doing more than anything else in the world, you know? Mm. But he's a manager, and he has a job to do.
I mean, I've got to ask you, you brought out the gay rumours, obviously, the whole sort of daft story about Trevor Morley. I mean, it did cast a shadow over you for a short period. How did it come about?
It only came up because of the England thing, because,
yeah.
It, you know, for me, it has a connection, so it's not something that we talk about all the time. In fact, I've just done an interview with Trevor on my podcast, and he was bringing it up all the time, you know. but at the time, it affected him, you know, and it affected his... You know, his whole life. And for me, you know, he was my friend and I was watching him suffer. I mean, I was getting abused, don't get me wrong, for no reason whatsoever. I wasn't involved in any incident and I was getting abused. I mean, I felt I dealt with it differently. It was still, don't get me wrong, things changed in my life where I took my children. Whenever I went out for a beer, people whispering, I'd have to go over and say, have you got something to say? They may have only been saying he plays for West Ham.
Yeah.
But my life changed, you know, and then even moving back up north, I couldn't take my kids and put them in school in Manchester near where I trained. So I moved out, all the way out to Southport, which is an hour and 15 minute drive for 3.5 years, just to protect my children, you know.
And that was years later, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, it went on for 10 years, mate. It went on. It's still going on today. You know, it was one of them things. You know, I know also, I took it as a compliment in a way that if other teams' fans were trying to get to me, they were doing it for a reason because they knew I could hurt them.
Mm.
You know, so they were trying to put me off my game. You know, I mean, there was one horrible time at Old Trafford and it does seem to be Man United fans more than anything. But I couldn't let my mum come to the game, my little old mum. And they sang that song, the horrible song, for 20 minutes non-stop. 20 minutes non-stop. It was ridiculous. And it still is.
And that was that when you were with West Ham or with City?
Yeah, with West Ham, yeah. No, with West Ham. But, you know, I take that as they hated the fact I was part of that, the demolition derby in 89 when we humiliated Fergie's boys. You know,
and plus, you know, we got one over on them a number of crucial times with you in the side as well.
Yeah, the Leeds last season before the, we were there game in hand and beat them 1-0 with Kenny Brown, and Leeds won it, and then 95 was brilliant for me.
Yeah,
95 stopping them and especially helping Gailey get his winners medal as well.
Yeah,
it was brilliant. We celebrated like we'd won the league.
We all did that day.
Well, we did that every Saturday anyway. We did every Saturday.
I mean, that was like, obviously you hadn't had Ludo out playing spoof that night because that was one of his best ever performances. Unbelievable. What about your midfield partners, Bish? I mean, you had so many different characters, you know, Monca, Martin Allen. What are your memories? Who are your favourites to play alongside?
Oh, Jesus. They all had the different qualities, mate, didn't they? I mean, for me, they're like brothers to me, you know, and it was more than teammates because, like I said, because we still mix today, but, you know, I wish I was there more, but I know for a fact when I do come home, I get in touch with Monkey, you know, with Kenny Brown, with Stevie Lomas, you know, I've seen Martin Allen when I've been home. I know he was busy and sometimes he was manager, but look, Martin had a different quality to Monks, you know. They were similar in the way we had to get the foot in, but I think you've stated that anyway. We could all get our foot in, you know. I think it was a sort of, when it was with Martin, I was holding a little bit more, you know, because he did have a tendency to bomb on and get goals. And so it wasn't by choice. It was the fact that I seen that we couldn't both go at the same time. You're playing a regular 4-4-2. When you know you've got Keeney and Chopper, that, for me as a midfield player, you didn't even have to look. You'd know they were there, you know, because we kept that width. We kept that width. And then, so if we attacked and Martin wanted to go, he would just go. And I was fine with that. It wasn't like I'd say to him, look, give me a chance. It's when people say, oh, you scored goals from outside the box. Well, yeah, I didn't get that far forward to get in the box, really.
Yeah.
But somebody had to, you know, somebody had to hold in case things broke down. And I felt when I played with Martin that was mainly me. The difference with Monks is we were similar. And
yes.
And we could take turns or, you know, there'd be the communication. I couldn't always go back and be the first to get the ball because he liked to do that also. So if he did that, I stepped a little bit further up and got things in the spaces and tried to create and slip little balls in, you know, for goals and stuff. So And with Monks, I mean, there was a trust, you know. You could fire the ball at him anywhere and you know he's going to bring it down.
Yeah.
And he's two-footed. Yeah. And then, you know, I'd like to think people had that trust in me, that faith in me. You know, I think I sacrificed goals. You know, I don't feel I scored enough, but I don't feel I got forward enough because I felt I had a responsibility. I wanted to start things off, come deep and get it off the back, lads. Which was great for me because the likes of Alvin and Gailey, who were footballing centre-halves and had faith in me, they'd know I would want it. So they know they would go and get it and I would be there. So Alvin used to tell me I was stupid sometimes because I'd come back in dangerous areas to help out, to receive the ball myself, for me to get out. But I had a confidence in myself and a trust, you know, and that's not easy when things aren't going right at Upton Park.
I mean, that was the thing about Harry Redknapp as well. I mean, there weren't many managers, not then, not now, who would have the bravery to stick all three, you know, ball-playing midfielders in the middle of a park, would they?
Harry loved footballers, though. Mm. And the beauty with Harry was, you know, he resurrected my career at Bournemouth. And he carried it on when he came to West Ham for the early bit. He just said to me, go out and do your stuff. He wouldn't give me any instructions, you know. Mm. And for your manager to have that faith in you, you want to go out and do well for him also. You know, the times were changing. I was 32 and he'd say to me, God, why don't you have a glass of wine with your meal like the foreigners? And I'd say, well, I grew up in a council estate. When did I have a glass of wine? So, I still like my pint. I didn't do it at the wrong time. I never went out after Wednesday. You know, I was always 48 hours before a game. And if I wasn't ready, I couldn't do that to myself. I couldn't do that to the supporters, you know. And my thing with Harry was, if you don't think I'm doing it, take the shirt off me. Don't play me. But I know for a fact I was doing it. And I know I could have stayed, had my testimonial. I know I could have got into that team, you know. I know I could have kept my place. And I believe I could have played in there till I was 35. Mm. I do, honestly. I mean, I went back and played in the Premier League at 35, you know.
Who were the players? I mean, I'm trying to cast my mind back. Was this the era in which, you know, Steve Lomas and Frank Lampard were coming into that your position?
Yeah, and then he ended up, I think, bringing Isle back, who was a great player, you know. There was reason for bringing young Frank through. Whether he was ready or not, he seen potential in him to make money and sell him on, I think. And when you've got a player like that, who went on to become fantastic for Chelsea, you know, he broke in and it was great. It's fine. But I don't think we were playing on a level playing field, competing for the places, because I think politics came in as well. And it ended up being right, you know. He came in and did his job and did well enough to warrant his move, you know. Maybe if I'd have hung on a bit. I didn't want to sit on the bench, though, you know, for no matter what money, you know. My testimonial would have been brilliant. But I wasn't playing football. And for me, that's what it was all about. It was sad when I left, because I left in the wrong way. I left under a bit of a cloud with H, which I didn't like. And I didn't see him for maybe 3 years after that. But, you know, I decided to go. I'd created something with Harry that he pulled me aside and said, OK, we're going to offer you the one more year for the testimonial. I went, oh, thanks very much. You know, like I haven't deserved it, you know. So I went, OK. He went, but Bish, I don't want you having any function through the year. Just have a game at the end of the season. He went, no, he said, but if you have functions, you're going to be having taking all the lads out and getting them drunk all year. Which was what we did anyway. So I wasn't happy with that. I thought that was an insult, tell you the truth. And I said to him then, I said, right there and then on the training field, I went, H, look, if I can find myself a club, would you give me a free transfer? And he went, I can't do that. I said, well, look, I can't do my testimonial year and give up that amount of money. I said, that's supposed to help me for the rest of my life. So you can't do that for me. I can't do that for you. You know? And it wasn't like he was giving me the 1 year. I deserved that 1 year. I deserved longer, actually. Maybe he's seeing the future and seeing that I wasn't going to be part of his plans. But then again, that's what managers do. And I accept that, if he'd have come out and told me that. But he didn't. He said it in a different way, which I was insulted at. So, you know, don't get me wrong. Me and Harry are friends. I love him to death. But things happen in your football life that sometimes you have to stand up and be counted about it. And you know, I'm man enough to say I'm wrong when I'm wrong. But this time I said, you know, will you guarantee me a free transfer? He went, well, yeah, okay. And I shook his hand. So we shook hands on it. And then when, I think I was out somewhere in London, and my missus phoned me up and said, you better come home quick. And I was like, yeah, I've heard that one before. I'll never come home. but she goes, she went, Joe Royal's been on the phone. You need to come home and speak to him. It's Man City. Straight away, my ears pricked up. And
so you go home for Joe Royal, but not for her.
No, yeah. So I did come home, made the phone call, drove straight down, straight up north to a reserve game they had at Port Vale. And I think it was actually the day after I drove. Straight up there, watched the game at Port Vale, spoke to Joe, phoned Harry from there. I said, hey, I'm signing for Man City. I said, either that or I'm coming back and being a fucking nuisance, you know. So he went, if that's what you really want. And I said, yeah, it is. And the sad thing is, I never knew the Chelsea game before that was my last game. I think it was 2-1 at home.
So we didn't get to give you a proper send-off as fans?
Well, I didn't get a chance to thank you, mate, you know. That was the sad thing for me. I didn't even come and get me boots. It was just, I was there and I stayed there, and then I ferried my family down a little bit later. I mean, look, that's one of the things that hurt me as well. When I did eventually come back, I mean, I did say at the time I had unfinished business at Man City. It was sad leaving West Ham. That was my home, you know. It was literally my home. The Upton Park pitch was my living room to me. You know, it was where I felt best. It was my sanctuary. That's what it felt like, you know. I know it wasn't always pleasant.
What was your reception, you know, when you came back with City? What are your memories of that?
Well, I came back and I think I'd just got back in the squad because I had a fallout with Joe as well, to be honest with you, over football again, to tell you the truth. That's a long story though, mate. I don't know how long you've got, but anyway, so I'd sort of got myself back into the squad after having a something that wasn't, you know, I'd refused to go and be on the bench at Chelsea. That's what it was. I'd played out my skin the week before, man of the match, had a big meeting within the club, all the kids, reserves, coaching staff in there, was told I was the only man amongst them because I go and receive the ball even when things are going wrong. And then I get told I'm going to be on the bench the next game. So I just disagreed and, you know, and then again, I loved Joe. I loved playing for Joe and still to this day, smile comes on my face, like seeing Bonzo, you know, big smile come on my face and you'll know. So, but I came back with the team I was on the bench back in the Premier League and we got beat 4-1. West Ham won 4-1. I'd had all sorts of thoughts before the game, you know. I'm going to put one of my original West Ham shirts on under my Man City shirt. And if I get on, I'm going to take it off in the middle of the pitch. And I had these thoughts and then I thought, well, what if I don't get on? I'm going to look like an arse, you know. I'm going to look like an idiot putting it on and then not even. And then I didn't put it on. As it happened, he didn't put me on either. And we're 4-1 down. And I'm thinking, just give me 2 minutes. 4-1 down, give me 2 minutes. And I nearly stepped up and went, are you going to put me on or what? But I didn't. I stepped up and went for a warm-up instead because I needed to get over there and let the fans know how much I appreciated them, you know. So, and the reception I got was unbelievable. It meant everything, you know.
Bish, it's been brilliant hearing you reflecting your days at West Ham. Been a fantastic guest. But before we let you go, I thought it'd be great to ask, you know, do you think the club has changed these days? I mean, when you think about the owners and like when it comes to recruitment, the amount of money they spend, do you think they've gone about things the right way? Or do you think, you know, we still have a long way to go before we can improve?
Look, I'm well out of the system. I like to come back. And when I do come back, I get treated like royalty, which is lovely, you know. It does feel like I'm coming home with the people, but it doesn't feel like I'm coming home with the stadium. And I think we haven't burst that bubble yet to make it home, you know what I mean? There's still this ongoing feud. People aren't happy with the ownership, which is understandable, but I won't get into that politically. You know, I do feel for the supporters who want more. But look, at the end of the day, it's got to be done on the field. And if them players aren't doing it on the field, it's gonna create chaos everywhere else. That it's working out there, there's a harmony and a happiness within the club. And it hasn't been working, has it? And there's a fear of relegation, and I can't believe we're in this situation. There's a few people out there, and I've said it on my podcast, 5 pints in, by the way, plug. I've said it on my podcast, you know, some of them players will be happier there being no fans there.
Yeah.
It will take the pressure, and that's a terrible thing to say.
It's awful, yeah.
It's a terrible... You imagine them players going out at Upton Park under that pressure. Can you imagine the chicken run 2 feet away screaming in your ear, asking someone else to take the throw in instead of you. You know,
I mean,
it was done.
Bish, you were part of a side that generated some of the greatest ever nights at Upton Park. I mean, you know, under the floodlights, so many nights.
You couldn't beat us. Couldn't beat us. Could you? I don't care who came. They couldn't beat us.
And you must have felt that before you've walked on the pitch on those Wednesdays and Tuesday nights.
Definitely.
You just knew that the opposition would hear it all outside in the tunnel. And we just don't have that anymore. A midweek game makes no difference whether it's a Wednesday night or a Sunday afternoon. You know, we don't have that edge as a club that we used to have, and it's a real shame.
We feed no one under the lights. It didn't matter who came. Didn't matter what division we were in. It didn't matter if Everton came in that cup game.
Yeah, you know, what a night that
there was.
There
was no way we thought we were losing. It didn't enter your mind, you know. We knew we'd have you lot out there. And that was the thing for me as well. I mean, especially midweek games. I never warmed up on the pitch before a game because of the atmosphere, because of how I felt when I ran out. I didn't want fans coming in dribs and drabs, you know, diluting the feeling I was going to get coming out of that tunnel. You must have had it from the other side. As soon as you seen the first player coming out, that's when it started. And for us, as soon as we viewed that green, the pitch, and the supporters over the other side, that's when it kicked in, you know what I mean?
I'll be honest with you, Bish, when I was often still in the bowling at kickoff, so I very often missed you coming out of the tunnel. I apologise for that, mate, but you know, I was usually there by 10 minutes in, and it was fantastic atmosphere by then. Listen, well, it's been fantastic talking to you. We're so grateful for your time. You've brought back so many special memories. We really appreciate it. We hope to see you at the London Stadium sooner rather than later. And let's get another plug in for your podcast as well, so people can hear more of your thoughts on the game there.
Yeah, it's at Five Pints Inn. It's me and my two sons. You know, we figured we'd go to pub, watch the games of a weekend, and have our debates after them. We thought we might as well have them on a podcast. Why not? And we do. Yeah. We have a couple of scoops. Everybody who comes on the show has got to be at least five pints in. loosens the tongue.
Yeah,
I mean, I must admit, the couple of interviews we've done with Trevor and with my mate at Man City, Paul Dickoff, they've lasted 4 hours. So if you think we're five pints in and then we've got a four-hour drinking session, I have actually not listened to part two of either of them because I heard myself getting drunken at the end of part one.
Well, that if that isn't a recommendation for everyone to go and listen to part two right now, then I don't know what is. Bish, once again, thanks ever so much. West Ham legend.
Pleasure,
delighted to be in your company. And come on, you Irons.
Come on, you Irons.